Hey, you. Want access to exclusive secret ops intel? Check out the link in the description.
Right now, whenever we're doing automations, we're used to doing tree-based automations where we take step one, goes to step two. If this happens, go to step three. What AI gives us the ability to do is we can take away the creating of the tree. Oh, I don't have to program. I can have AI figure out where to go next.
Welcome to Secret Ops, the podcast uncovering the world of operations one episode at a time. I'm your host, Ariana Caffone, and today's guest is Kevin Dean, founder and CEO of Manabyte, which has an entire focus on enhancing the customer experience through intelligent process automation. Now, Kevin has seen the evolution of automation from the old days of logic to now the current days of AI. And we discuss different ways of approaching automation and how to best use AI in making your processes as smart as they can be while also keeping the human magic right at its fingertips. So let's jump in. You've been doing process automation for decades, and I really want to nerd out with what you've seen in your career, because, you know, the most recent one is AI, and we'll definitely talk about that. But I'm sure that you've seen every single trend, technology come into the scene when it comes to automations. So do you mind walking us through that for the listeners?
Yeah. Oh, man. It's like, where do we start? So just a little bit of background for the listeners. I got into this world right out of school, right? And so, you know, I was fortunate enough to actually go to school and then end up doing what I went to school for. And I've had the opportunity to see so many changes throughout my career, from starting getting into the business world, being an entrepreneur, growing, you know, a company to the size that we are today, you know, being a multi-million dollar company. But it kind of started, if I age myself, I actually worked for a company that I don't think is even in business anymore, but was big, a Sears and Roebuck company. I don't even know if they're still in business anymore.
Yes. I don't know if they are, but that was like my childhood. I was going there.
I don't think they're in business anymore. They may be, but it's not my fault that they're not in business. It's not my fault. But one of my jobs out of school, it was, they wanted me to come in and help them figure out who their customers were and get them the right information through these promotions at the right time. And it was a lot of data entry manual stuff. And I'm lazy. So I'm like, you know what? I don't want to do it this way. I want to automate it, right? And so I built this bit of software for, at the now it's like antiquated, but it would literally like catch all of their customers as it was coming off the registers. I know it's commonplace now, but when I was doing this, it wasn't common. And it would literally get the customer information, understand who they were, separate it out, and then automate the follow-up with these customers, you know, through, at the time, it was through postcard. And so that kind of began this process of like, you can use technology to make the lives of businesses better. And we just continue to iterate and grow from, you know, using old programs back in the day that were hand-built to the different software platforms that have come out over years and years and years. I remember doing things with like old databases like FoxPro, and then there was SQL Server era, and then there was, you know, using things like SharePoint to automate, and then other workflow tools. And now with integrations and other things that we have today, AI, which is huge, changing the way that we think about it. It's been an amazing journey to kind of look at how things have continued to improve, get better, and then take away the mundane things that we may be doing as humans to allow us to add value. And every time that happens, there always becomes more that we can do to add value as humans. Even though we keep taking more away, it just keeps adding more to make things better. And it's just it's been a cool process.
So you started Manabyte, and you're the CEO of Manabyte, and your world is not just about how do we improve the processes within businesses, but then you've got a whole team now that has to look at that approach and be able to do that in the same regard. So how has it changed going from, you know, being, you know, an individual human making changes to now leading a company of a bunch of people who are having to do that?
We have built within our company a culture of curiosity and a culture of learning, right? And I think that's kind of the foundation, because if you're always curious and if you're always learning, then you're going to be looking for opportunities. And so that's one of the things that we start with. You got to have this mindset. It really starts with the mindset of what can I do? What am I learning? What's out there? And then we just go out and we experiment in a controlled environment. And then we look for ways to scale that across shared learning. So it's always comes back to this cycle of shared learning. And then the other thing that we do is we think about, you know, what is it that is a waste of time? Right. What's a waste of time? And so as we work across, you know, dozens and dozens of customers every single year, we document what are we doing? Where does our time go? Right. And as we look at things internally that we have to do in order to, you know, improve our time management, that gives us the opportunity to go and apply that across customers. But then the last thing that I would say is that we also have a culture. And we kind of, you know, make it a standpoint of being good listeners, right? Because when you're a good listener, you hear things that really help you to get to a better conclusion. Because a customer or someone may come to you and ask for X, but really they need Y and Z in combination, right? And so you've got to be like a doctor who listens to the symptoms and says, no, that's not what you have. This is what you have. And this is the process that you need in order to cure that. And so I think those are some of the things that we have to have, that we try to build a culture around those principles. And then I'll just say, the technology really doesn't matter, right? Mm. The technology really doesn't matter, because the technology is just the tool that you use in order to fix the problem that whoever it is they're trying to fix it for.
Yeah, I think the technology now, because it's sort of more accessible than ever, it's these different canvases that you can play with, right? Before, you used to have developers that could translate that, or, you know, even you had to have specialized data scientists to be able to do certain things. Now those are baked into products where you don't have to be a specialist in that, and you can implement it and use it and learn it, which is refreshing, but also exhausting.
It is. And regardless of the technology and all the things that it can do, you always have to be a good listener, right? Because if you're not a good listener, then you're never going to know what you really need to be solving for.
We all have had the experience where we think we knew what the solution should be, and then you're three steps into it and you're like, no, this is not it. I didn't ask enough questions. It's humbling, definitely. I've done that many, many times. I did want to go back to one thing that you said, which was so refreshing. Talking about things that you feel like you waste time on. So this is, I think, the eternal struggle with people who are in operations, is that there are many rabbit holes that we could and probably should jump down, but not all of them are created equal. So as a team, how do you vet what time is worthwhile to do certain things? What does that look like in action?
That's a great question. I think that it comes down to where the greatest value is going to be on the output, right? Mm-hmm. Where do I as a human add the greatest value that makes this better, right? Where I'm going to add some thinking, I'm going to add some perspective, I'm going to add the piece that makes this different and better come out. And it may not be the things that you think they are. Sometimes we get stuck in, I'm good at A, B, and C, so I want to do A, B, and C, when really we should be automating out A, B, and C, because just because we're good at it doesn't mean that we need to keep doing it, right?
Yeah, it's easy to stay in the place that feels safe because it's familiar, right? But you will not grow in that safe space. This gets into the experimentation of automation. And I think that's a really important piece of what your company does, which it says, essentially, we're going to prototype this thing, right? We're going to experiment with what this solution could be, and we're going to test it until we roll it out. A lot of people miss that stage, right? Or they want to jump straight into automating everything. And like, that's we know how that ends. It'll be a hot mess. So talk to me about how you've learned to maybe standardize the approach to experimenting, because every experiment is going to be different, but there probably are some commonalities. So what have you learned through all of your experience?
Start small, start with steps, right? You know, you're going to test step one, make sure that step one is right. Add step two, make sure step two is right. Add step three, make sure step three is right. And what you're going to find is as you're automating out those steps, there are going to be pieces where you can't automate. And that's where you have to pause and say, okay, this is where it isn't going to work. And then you put all the pieces together and test it working as a system, right? Mm-hmm. And so those are things that you have to do in the way that you think about.
How do you bring your customers along in that experimental journey? Because I find that for a lot of people, they're just like, well, why don't you just fix it? It's like, well, it's not really, it's a little bit more complex because we have the human element, we have the technology element, we have the data element, we have, you know, we've all of these different pieces. So how do you, I guess, help others to learn what that looks like if it's their first time going through the prototyping phase of a process or automation?
Yeah. So that is the change management piece of it, right? And the change management piece is scary, right?
So scary.
It's the human piece. Like we can't fail, but we're telling you you're going to fail, right? And so you've got to manage through that. And the way that you manage through that is, you know, it's like the adage, you eat an elephant one piece at a time. You can't disclose everything to them at a time. And even though we know we're experimenting, we make them feel like it's not an experiment. We're going to go for quick wins, right? This is a quick wins phase. It's not an experiment phase, but yes. This is a quick win phase, right? Now, oh, look, see this quick wins? Now, this is just the beginning piece. And then they get comfortable with the quick wins. And now I say, okay, guys, let's start going for the bigger piece. But as you go for that, again, you let them know, remember, part of the process is we're going to come back and revisit this, right? And so you don't scare them by showing them all of these challenges up front. You show them, oh, this is the pretty nice things that are going to happen right away, right? And then you get them conditioned to the process by things that don't have a significant impact, right? But for them, says that they learn it, now they feel comfortable, and now you can open up.
That's such a good point. There's a bit of inception happening, which is, I think.
Did you just reference inception? You didn't reference inception. You did not. My goodness. That is one of my all-time faves. Oh my goodness.
Because it's magical and it's so trippy. But that is, it is what we're doing a bit. I know that we're going to get to a better phase, but I don't quite know what that's going to look like for this company, for this use case, for this instance. So I have to, there's a bit of blind leading the blind, but you know what I'm saying? There's a bit of that going on.
Yeah, it's a new journey, but we have the tools to take them on that journey. So we may not have been down this road before, but we know what traveling down a road looks like, right? And we have the tools to guide us through. We've got the roadmap, even though we've never been down the road. And we've got the spinning top to keep us focused.
See, now we know you're going to go home and watch Inception tonight. That's the dinner plan.
Totally. Everybody watch Inception tonight. Got to go see it again.
So let's talk about artificial intelligence and break that down a little bit more, because I do think that people have a lot of feelings. There's a lot of emotions around artificial intelligence. But let's talk about the practicality of implementing AI in automation. What, like at a basic level, how are we implementing AI in automation? What is it? Is it in the data? Is it in the platforms? Is it in the insights? Is it in all of the above? How are you seeing it most used right now?
Okay, that's a great question to ask. How is it being most used right now? Because that is where we say this is where the rubber meets the road, and this is what is practical, not the art of the possible or the visionary pieces, right?
Totally.
Right now, whenever we're doing automations, we're used to doing kind of tree-based automations where we take step one, goes to step two. If this happens, go to step three. If this happens, go to step four, right? So we have that basic logic. What AI gives us the ability to do, and where we're seeing right now, is we can take away the creating of the tree, right? We can say, I don't have to program if step one, if step two, I can have AI figure out where to go next and then go down the right path. And so in the decision-making piece, that is where AI right now has a ton of value. So I think that's one area. The other place that I see AI having a ton of value from a practical standpoint is providing the right context to the results that it's bringing out. For a long, long time, businesses have struggled with personalization. Nobody's done it right. Nobody's really done it right. AI is now solving for the personalization aspect of automation. I think about how on the customer service side, AI chatbots have been a letdown for a long time. So we have to say it, right? AI is not new. All the things that we're seeing aren't new, but now it just got smarter, right? Mm. And because it's smarter, it can do what we've always wanted it to do the right way. And then I think where it comes in the future is when you pull together, you know, multiple AI solutions and go to an agentic AI solution platform, right? We now can use fuzzy logic to allow it to make decisions on its own without us even having to work through those steps. We just say, oh, you're going to have, here's one agent that does X, here's an agent that does Y, right? Pull these together and we're going to let you decide how to go down that path. That's the art of the possible, but it's not there yet. It's not there yet. And that's where it gets really, really cool.
It's so funny you brought up the customer service thing, because I'm literally going through the process of creating an AI agent for the first time in a customer service platform. Now, I used to do customer service manual back in the day, cranking out those emails. And my God, it is soul sucking. It is soul sucking. But it's one of the most important things within a business is good customer service. And in learning how the AI customer service layer of a platform is coming in, what it's reteaching me, like you said, it's not a decision tree where we go to this branch and now we do this thing based on this response. You have to look at it in almost a broader sense. I don't know how to describe it. Like, my aperture is not so linear, and it's A or B. It's like A to Z options, and I am trying to figure out the best data to feed AI to get the most accurate A to Z options, and then refine. It feels like I'm painting with technology more than anything I've experienced before. And I'm not good at it right now because I've never done this before, right? This is a whole new skill set that I think is also a bit of the barrier to adoption, is the abilities that we have now I've never had before operationally. And I have got to figure out how to learn to do that.
Yeah.
But God, it's hard.
So here's the cool thing though, right? Before, we would think, okay, I've got a customer service problem. I want to solve it. I'm going to go and build a solution. Okay. That's how we would think about it. I think that approach slows us down to growth, right? And so there are a lot of good tools that move us faster so that, again, we don't have to do a lot of the building on our own. We do the thinking. We tell AI tools what we want, and it does it for us. I'm going to give you two examples. So the first example is a platform specifically in the customer service space, Maven AGI. Maven AGI is a great platform because all that you do is you tell it, look at my data source here. Here's my external data source. Here's all of my internal data sources. I point you to those data sources and I'm done. Mm-hmm. And so now it handles all of my customer service issues because it has access to all of my data. And so when a customer interacts with the bot that's already built, now what happens is it's answering the questions on its own without me having to tell it or build those trees anymore. And then what it does, it gives me the ability to say, oh, this is what you answered, but that's not the best answer. And you're providing the gaps in knowledge, and it's telling you where the gaps in knowledge are. Now you can provide data to fill in those gaps of knowledge. And that's where we have to, as humans, spend our time is filling in the gaps where AI falls short. But a tool like a Maven AGI, it will tell you where there's a gap in knowledge. It won't answer it the question wrong. It'll only answer questions that are right. But then it'll alert us to say, oh, there's a gap in knowledge here. I didn't know how to answer this question 100% accurately, because that's also the fear, is that it doesn't answer them accurately. Another example is there's tools like Repleted. And what that one does is you literally tell it, I want an agent that does A, B, and C, and it goes out and builds your agent, right? And so this is like mind-blowing. You're telling AI to build you something with AI, right? It's like so recursive, right? Again, it's back to inception, right? A new way of thinking.
It's so bizarre and wonderful and confusing and exciting. It's all of the feelings at once.
I was talking to someone in our space and they said, you know, my husband's a programmer. And he said, well, the way that you talk to a bot is you have to think like a programmer. And to some extent, that may be true, right? If you're using certain platforms. But the great thing is that there are other platforms that are out there that people may not be exposed to. And that's the beauty. Well, you don't have to think like a programmer. You just have to think like a human and talk like a human and just say, look, here's what I want to do. Tell me how to do it, right? Tell me what you need to know in order to build this app for me. Tell me what you need to know in order to solve this problem for you. And it will walk you through it, right? It's like, oh, here's what I need to know. So I think instead of thinking like a programmer, think like a parent teaching a child.
That's exactly it. That's teaching more than just a binary, here's how you do something. You're teaching a theory almost, which is more than just instructions. There's context. There's all these other pieces to it. That is such a beautiful analogy. 10 out of 10, Kevin. Yeah. You nailed it. Boom. One thing before we wrap up, which is you are passionate about ocean conservation. You live in Tampa Bay, obviously, this background for people who, that's real, just everybody, that is a real background. I find that people who are operators, technology, we often have passions in the physical world that help us get grounded. And for you, it seems to be all things related to the ocean and the water. Can you just talk me through on a more personal level what that outlet is for you and how that sort of changes your aperture of work?
You know, I'm a water baby, right? You know, I've been scuba diving since I was like 14 and just always in the water. And I've had the ability to go and scuba dive at some amazing places around the world, you know, Sharm el Sheikh in Egypt, Hawaii, you know, just some really great spots. And what the water does for me, and I think it does it for a lot of people, it brings you calm and peace. And that allows me to refocus. When I started Manobite, so mano is the Hawaiian word for shark. So shark bite. And when I started the company, I was in Hawaii diving, right? And I was just stressed out from working at a Fortune 500 company. And I found so much peace being in the water. I'm like, you know what? This isn't right, right? There's a better way. And that's when I went out and started Manobite, right? And so it really is a grounding for me. And it always reminds me that, you know, everybody has good days. Everybody has bad days. You have good customers, bad customers. You know, you have a good fiscal quarter. You have a bad fiscal quarter. None of that matters. Just get out and enjoy life.
Whenever I stop thinking about the problem and do something else, it's when I figure out the problem. There's the more that we can develop our lives outside of the automation and the operation, I believe the more that we end up adding to that skill set. You are such a bundle of joy on so many different levels. So I got a couple rapid fire questions I'm going to send you away before we wrap up officially. So here's the first one, which is, what is the favorite part of your day?
The favorite part of my day, honestly, is this is going to sound crazy, but when I get up in the morning and I have my super quiet focus time where I could just start thinking and meditating, that's my favorite part of the day.
What is a favorite quote of yours or a quote that stuck with you throughout the years?
Since people who've heard me, who know me and who've heard me before, they know it. Guns N' Roses, Mr. Brownstone, he makes this quote, and this has carried me through my life. In the song, he says, I don't worry about nothing because worry is a waste of my time. And so that to me is just awesome. Like, why worry? It's a waste of time.
Totally is. And the older I get, the more waste of the time it is. I don't got enough time for worry in my days. No way.
No way.
What is the best purchase that you've made under $50?
I can tell you, game changer, sleep mask. Game changer. Like, for so long, I'd never used a sleep mask. Game changer.
Have you ever tried one of those heated eye masks?
No. Are those good?
Oh, my. I'm sorry to have introduced you to that. It is. It relaxes your eye muscles and just, like, feels fabulous. What is something that makes you little kid happy? And I know we talked about all things ocean, but is there something else that kind of gets you excited?
I tell you what we love. I tell you what we love. Love Broadway plays. Oh, my goodness. Love Broadway plays. And so, like, in our house, we speak in quotes from songs, plays, and movies.
I am a theater kid in an adult body, and that makes me so happy. I can't even convey to you. Last question for you, which is, there's so much that you've done in your life, but what would you like to be when you grow up?
So I'll tell you, the human brain fascinates me. The way that people think, psychology, the whole everything is just absolutely amazing. And so I would love to, when I grow up, find a way to tap into how people think and help people unlock how they think to achieve better results in their life.
Kevin, truly, thank you so much for your brain and your time and your energy. If people are listening to you and they're obsessed as much as I am, where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can always find me on LinkedIn. You can go to my personal website, kjdean.com. And our website is mantlebite.com. So come out and see us there. And we'd love to, you know, engage, connect, and just talk about great things.
Kevin, so appreciate your time again. Secret Ops listeners, thank you so much for listening. Remember, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts or on YouTube as well. And we will see you next time.
Bye. See ya.
Hey, listener, do you want to be a top operator in business and in life? Well, we at Secret Ops are here to help you do just that. Check out our monthly Secret Ops newsletter with exclusive intel just for you. From bonus content to secret resources, we've given you the VIP access. To sign up, check out the link in the description. And as always, thanks for listening.